Hey everyone, before we get started today with our discussion about Stephen King's It, I have to thank our latest patron, Gregory Parker. Though apparently, according to Jeff Burnham, I actually want to thank Greg's son, who's our patron and is using his dad's account, hopefully with his dad's permission. I don't know then your name, young sir. But I do know that you're one of the co-hosts of the Spook Factory podcast. It's a couple of nine-year-olds reviewing some pretty hardcore horror movies. So go and check them out. I intend to. And yeah, I can't thank you enough. Every little bit helps. Every patron is a saint to us. And we hope to keep generating Patreon-exclusive content just for you and the rest of our patrons and future patrons. If you would like to become a patron, you can go to www.patreon.com/wordsalad and support us, the Countdown, Cadavercast, and Dealing with Philip. Help us keep things running, keep churning out content, and we will try to repay you with bonuses. So thank you again. Enjoy this week's episode, and thanks for listening. Hello and welcome to Quote Unquote Guilty, the only guilty pleasure podcast with air quotes in the title. I'm your host, Joe Ketchum, and I'm joined today by my mother, Jennifer Kohler.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good. You know, normal.
Normal. Typical.
Typical work day.
Usual mom stuff.
No, not usual.
I assume we just sit around baking muffins all day.
Yeah, you know me better than that. I work for a living.
She said as if I don't. You sound like Amanda.
Yeah.
I make all the money.
That's
fair. During the school year, I make my fair share of the money. Uh-huh. It's just the summer that I'm a mooch.
Mm-hmm. Gigolo. Greg prefers gigolo.
Ah, okay. I can live with that. That's a point of pride, I think.
I think so.
So what are we talking about today, Mom?
We are talking about It.
Stephen King's It, the novel.
Yes, versus the movie.
Yes, I imagine we'll talk about the movie a little bit.
Okay.
Because they made some changes.
Lots.
It's one of those rare cases where I will say unequivocally the book is better.
See, and yeah. I believe that you should never judge a book by its movie.
Yeah. But the book is, usually I like the movie as much or better, or does something different. I'm intrigued by that. But the It movie really pulls its punches. It should have been really disturbing.
It should have. It should have given you nightmares.
Yeah. And it was really muted, I thought.
Yeah. It was kind of weeny.
Yeah. But we'll see. Maybe they just don't want to do horrible things happening to kids for 2 hours. So maybe when they do the sequel in 2019, it will, with the adults, it'll be more grotesque.
They left too much out.
I mean, we'll talk about some things they cut. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, but I have to say that reading this novel is maybe one of the proudest accomplishments of my life. Because it's like at least 1,000 pages. I read it on Kindle, so I'm not exactly sure how long the book version is.
The first time that I read it was in paperback, and it was a good 2.5 inches thick.
Yeah.
It's a big book.
It's a big book, and it's maybe unnecessarily as long as it is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Stephen King is known for pulling out details and sidetracks and, you know, and then he pulls things from his other novels into his books.
Yeah.
So if you haven't read his other books, sometimes you can get a little bit lost in the details.
Yeah, because I know that several of his books take place in Derry, Maine.
Yes.
Even part of 11/22/63, yep, which is the other King book I have read start to finish, mm-hmm, takes place in Derry, Maine. And I heard on another podcast, doesn't Dreamcatcher take place in Derry?
I believe so, yes.
Because I started Dreamcatcher back when the movie came out and I never finished it.
Yeah. And you'll want to finish the book.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely want to.
And some of his books, of course, you know, the Dark Tower series, of course, is 13 books long.
Yeah.
And a lot of his other books refer to the Dark Tower in usually only a small smidgen here and there. But if you've read the Dark Tower series, you go, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of like references to characters in this and other things. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they reference Mike Hanlon in Dreamcatcher or something like that.
Yep.
I believe there's a reference to Pennywise or something in 11/22/63.
Yep.
You know, so little things like that.
I think he's also an Insomnia, I think. I don't know.
I also believe is Derry.
Yeah, I've read so many of his books that it's almost impossible for me to keep them separate. You know, they all are together to me.
Yeah.
But I've been reading his books since I was 15. I think that was the first time I read The Shining.
Which is probably going to come up for me soon. I really want to read The Shining. I really want to read The Stand because they're going to make that into a trilogy of movies.
Yeah, The Stand is excellent. And The Shining is probably, it was the one book when I was a teenager that I could not read at night.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah, it was for a 15-year-old, it was terrifying.
He has a knack for disturbing imagery.
Yes.
And it's not so much, like, it's talking about it specifically, because that's what I'm most familiar with. other than 11/22/63, which is not a horror book, it's just a fantastic sci-fi time travel book.
Yes.
I was going to bring the Blu-ray for you to watch, and I completely...
I know.
I'm sorry. Someday. I'll remember.
When you come over for dinner, someday.
Yeah. Yeah. Typical mom. Here comes the guilt.
Yes.
On the recording for all
I'm not even Jewish.
No, but you're Italian, which is pretty close.
It is. Very.
I was saying it's not so much the monster aspects of it that's disturbing. Mm-mm. It's the human, what the human characters are capable of.
Yeah.
That's really off-putting.
Because some of them, you can tell they're under the influence of it, but others are just that way.
Yeah, they're just people who are dickheads.
People who are, exactly. Yeah.
Especially like men in this book.
Yes.
Who are not our main characters are all pretty terrible, like the fathers.
Yeah.
Of the various kids.
It seems like every single father figure to the kids is not somebody you'd want raising your child.
Yeah, even Bill's dad, like after Georgie dies, he becomes completely disconnected and uncaring about raising his living son.
But that actually is pretty, I actually thought that was a bit of realism.
Oh, I'm sure it is realistic.
There are a lot of parents that if they lose a child, the other child is basically forgotten. Even if they're right there in front of them. That I thought was pretty spot on.
I imagine it's a reminder. Like, to see the kid that survived is a constant reminder of the kid you lost.
Right.
I mean, that could be really hard.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
So, I mean, and we don't get a lot of Bill's dad in this. Mm-mm. We just get mentions of, you know, Bill can pretty much do whatever he wants because his parents have completely checked out since Georgie died.
Yeah. And luckily, he's self-sufficient.
Yeah. And Bill's very capable and he has his group of friends, the Loser Club.
Yeah. The losers. I can relate.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to have a hard time getting into stories about...
The winners?
Like middle school age, high school age kids. So, yeah, I mean, we're just going to jump around and talk about the novel and probably because we went and saw the movie together, which made you jump a lot.
Yeah, it did.
Like, that was the funnest part for me was every few minutes, every jump scare you fell for.
Yes, I did. I always do.
And I don't think I fell for any. It was just kind of like, oh, yeah.
But like when I'm reading a book.
Yeah.
The same thing is true of the movie. I forget what's around me and I am in that movie or I'm in that book and I react to it. It's like when I'm reading a book and it's funny, I laugh out loud. And it's very embarrassing when you're in a restaurant and you're by yourself and suddenly you're cracking up.
Oh God, I'm reading To Set a Watchman right now.
Okay.
Go Set a Watchman.
Yeah.
Harper Lee's book that came out right after she died. And there are parts where it's just, oh, I'm reading To Kill a Mockingbird again and I will like laugh out loud or smile and
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, I know that that book's not very popular, but so far I'm enjoying it quite a bit. Did you watch the 90 TV movie of It?
No, I could not bring myself to do it because I knew it would be horrible.
It is horrible.
I just couldn't watch
it. Like, you want to talk about muted.
Well, first of all, it was made for TV. ABC. Good God. I knew that it would be absolutely ridiculously awful.
Yeah.
And I never even watched it on like Netflix or anything. Just couldn't do it.
I watched it for the first time just like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I never watched it when I was a kid.
No, it would, I think that watching that movie, if you were judging Stephen King, you would never read anything by Stephen King.
I think watching a lot of movies based on Stephen King, you might be put off of his writing.
I haven't seen a movie yet that effectively captures his twisted persona.
And obviously, I haven't read enough of his stuff to judge the movie adaptation. I've seen a lot of movies based on his work.
Yeah.
But to varying levels of success. Like, I like the Dreamcatcher movie.
I haven't seen
it. I don't like the Shining movie.
No, the Shining movie sucked.
I mean, it's very popular, but...
Both of them sucked.
Well, didn't he have more of a hand in the made-for-TV one?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, I thought it was more in keeping
and
with the
I
book.
Believe there were two theatrical versions. There was the one with Jack Nicholson and Shelley Duvall, who, by the way, I hate with a passion. I think she's the worst actress on the face of the planet.
Well, she hated that movie, so...
Good, because it didn't like her either.
Well, she hated the process of making the movie, like yeah. working with Kubrick.
But, yeah, well, and maybe that was why I didn't like it. It's a Kubrick movie. I'm not particularly fond of him. So
he's real hit or miss for me.
Yeah. But
I thought the only other Shining version was another... the made-for-TV with, what's his name? From Wings. Not Tim Daly, but the other
Yeah, the other
one.
Guy. Yeah.
Steven Weber? Is that his name?
Oh, boy, asking the wrong girl
yeah,
for my name.
I'm pretty sure that's him.
I thought that was in the theater, but maybe I'm wrong.
I'm pretty sure that was just a TV miniseries.
Even if it was just for TV, I wouldn't have watched it.
Okay. I never saw that one.
No. Awful.
I didn't see the Kubrick one until I was an adult.
Yeah.
But I wasn't impressed.
And of course, I couldn't sit through Pet Sematary because the kid looked like you.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to walk out. So I have no idea if that one was good or bad.
It's like a cult classic. It has its following, but it's not a well-made movie by any. And then, of course, there's Maximum Overdrive, which King made himself.
I want to tell you he something. Directed. Maximum Overdrive was great.
Maximum Overdrive
I actually
is
liked
insane.
That. It, if you haven't seen it, you should see it.
I have, yeah. King actually does not remember directing it because he was so high on cocaine the entire time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, no. He was a major stoner.
Oh, he was out of it, especially through that.
And you can tell.
Yeah. it's an absurd film.
Yep.
But I don't know. I just kind of want to jump around in the book of it because there's so much to unpack.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe we could even go character by character. We were talking about Bill.
Okay. We like Bill.
I like Bill, but he's really annoying to read. Because
yes.
of his stutter.
Yes.
His stutter is incessant and constant and always there.
Well, this time through, I just didn't have the time to sit and reread the book.
Yeah.
I've been listening to it on audio.
And I guess when they read it, they stutter?
They do the stuttering. They do, you know, the guy, the reader, and I'd have to look it up, but the narrator is really good at imparting that he is talking in different characters. He doesn't necessarily change the voices, but he does change the pitch and the way he speaks. Like, you can tell the difference between when he's speaking Bev's words versus Bill's words, even without the stutter.
Other than Bill being horrible to read, mm-hmm. like, to the point where I had to, like, skip ahead in his lines and get to the next consonant.
Right.
like,
you
like
wanted
you're
to fill
actually
in the
talking
blank.
To someone with a stammer. You're like, come on, skip ahead. Yep. Skip to the next word. Just give up on that one. I get it.
Yeah.
And of course, when he's an adult, he regresses to the stutter.
Right. Like, but I also think that the stutter is very important because he was the leader of the group.
Okay.
And even as the lead, even as a stutterer who is usually mocked or thrown out of even the losers group, he was the leader.
That's true, yeah.
And he was the one that everyone looked to make it right, to tell them what to do, to tell them how to do things. He was the guy that Bev fell in love with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though she would have been better off with Ben.
Yeah.
You know, and so even though every single one of them had an issue, and let's face it, they were some pretty significant issues, the stutter should have put him at the bottom of the pecking order, and it didn't.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring it up because it reminds me of like the Animorphs.
Yeah.
Which was a book series I read when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And they always talk about how Jake, the leader of the Animorphs, like never wanted to be the leader. He's mm-hmm. just naturally who everyone looked to
right.
to make decisions.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Bill's kind of that here, where even though he did not advocate to be the leader of the losers, everyone just kind of looks to him for guidance.
Right.
They have all gravitated towards him because it kind of started off as him and
it was him Eddie.
Mm-hmm. And Richie.
Yeah.
And then they stumble across Ben.
Right.
After he's been attacked by... What's his name? Henry.
Henry Bowers.
Oh, man.
The evil Henry Bowers.
Henry is a harrowing character.
Didn't we all know a Henry Bowers in high school?
Thankfully, I did not.
Well, I did, and I went to an all-girls school, so figure that one out.
Yeah. Henry is just a sadist.
He is. He's a sociopath.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
Absolutely.
He is a sociopath.
I mean, he murders Mike's dog.
And he murders his own father.
Murders his dad.
Yeah. He's just evil. Evil, evil. And he never got any better.
No, because, we catch up to him as an adult, which won't happen in the movie because child Henry dies in the movie.
He did.
He falls down the well when he attacks Mike.
That's right. I forgot about that. I wonder how they're going to reconcile that.
I have no idea. I think what they might do is rather than having Henry and Bev's husband, just have Bev's husband control by Penny or being driven crazy by Pennywise.
Right. Yeah. Because Bev's husband, I wanted to kill myself.
Oh, yeah. But man, the introduction to Bev as an adult and Bev's husband, mm-hmm. I kind of love that scene. Horrifying.
It is.
It's absolutely terrifying. And you get a little bit of their history, like when they started dating the first time he hits her and how she just becomes complacent with it and marries him anyway. And
well, she basically married her father.
Yeah, that's exactly
right. Unfortunately, a lot of women do.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Daddy issues. It's a real thing.
It is a real thing. And most women don't even see it. They don't mm-hmm. see their father in their husband. Because usually by the time they marry their husband, their father has either improved, digressed to the point where they don't see him anymore, or has died.
Yeah.
So they don't see that they're marrying their father.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's pretty consistent idea.
It's not just an idea. It happens every day.
But that scene, like, that's maybe the most terrifying thing in the book to me, mm-hmm. is the scene where Bev gets the call from Mike and has to face off with her husband because
mm-hmm.
she has to go. And he's like, I can't even remember what sets him off in the first place. Just being woken up by the phone annoys him. And he goes and gets a beer because he's an alcoholic.
Yep.
And he comes back and she's packing and he decides to just lay her out.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time, maybe in their relationship, she stands up to him. He's like, No, this is more important than your nonsense. I have to go. But then she has to fight him off and actually incapacitate him.
Yeah.
It's so wonderfully written.
That was great. The part that I hated about her character was when they were in the restaurant and they were talking about all their lives and everything. And she's, but Tom is so wonderful. And I'm only this important because of Tom. And this is all because of Tom. I wanted to reach into the pages of the book and slap her upside the head.
Well, I didn't feel like she actually believed that as she was saying.
No, but she was saying it.
Yeah, but I feel like she just didn't want them to worry about her. And which is a whole other issue with her character.
Yeah, but at that point, they hadn't fully remembered their childhood.
Yeah.
They still didn't have all of that knowledge base. So she it's almost like she'd been so used to covering him for him for so many years. Mm-hmm. But she had finally fought back. You would have thought she would have been infused with that power of saying, I don't have to put up with this crap anymore. And I did something about it, by God. And she doesn't take credit for any of that. And that kind of was that was a little disappointing to me.
Yeah.
But again, it's a book being written by a guy.
Well, so, I mean,
He may not have felt that way from a female perspective.
Yeah.
So,
and I feel like even, King in this book has a really, has a real talent for writing women, for mm-hmm. writing homosexual characters, for writing characters of color.
Yeah, he really does.
Yeah.
It's almost like he has lived in their shoes.
Yeah, I mean, you really feel like he's drawing on personal experiences. Yeah. I feel like he hates his father.
And from what I understand from his personal biography, him and his dad got along great.
Really? Okay, that's really surprising to me, actually, because I assumed that was, since it was every father relationship was so negative, I just assumed that was from his own life.
Well, I had to think it was funny because, of course, Bill grows up to be a writer.
Yeah.
And writes the kind of books that Stephen King writes.
There's always a writer character in these books.
And he is people ask him, well, how do you come up with your ideas? And he feels like an idiot because he can't just say, I don't know. It's just there.
Yeah.
You know, and we all know those people that have really warped imaginations. I'm looking at one right now. Yes, you. But you wonder where they draw that from. And that is a very common question. And I'm sure it's a question Stephen King gets asked all the time. So that was actually quite an interesting parallel to himself.
I mean, but his imagination is it comes off the page.
Oh, it just hits you in the face.
It's the details. He gets so detailed and specific, like you really feel like you're
part of
this world. Yeah.
But that's what also makes this book hard to read for people who like to just skim through.
Yeah.
If all you're looking for is brain candy, you don't want to read Stephen King.
Yeah, it's more cerebral than you'd think.
Mm-hmm. Very. Very in-depth.
You really have to keep up. You have to keep track of the characters and what they're doing.
Yeah, you can't skip a chapter ahead. You'll miss something important.
Yeah, because he jumps around so much.
Yeah.
That's one thing the movie is missing for me. And maybe they will work
linear.
It into the second one where as the adults remember their childhood, we'll flash back to things we didn't see in the child story.
Maybe.
Because I don't want to flash back to things we've already seen.
No, that wouldn't be any.
But if we cut in with the child cast who is all great.
Yeah.
In the new movie,
and
it's them remembering things. I think that could work really well, but, you know, they're supposed to remember Pennywise, and we saw all their adventures with Pennywise.
Right. But even the way they got rid of Pennywise the first time as children doesn't match up
in the movie. That's really disappointing to me, actually.
Because him staying a clown even throughout them, you know, shoving him back down into the well or whatever.
Just beating him up with bats and stuff.
Yeah. And that wasn't appropriate. That whole idea of chud or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
You know, gripping the tongue of your enemy and then, you know, telling jokes until one of you lets go. You know, that's really what they basically had to go through to a point. Bill being able to say that phrase without stuttering.
Yeah.
That was important.
Oh, man. I loved in the movie, he has a monologue when he's going to go in and face Pennywise and the other kids don't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the monologue and he goes in by himself. And I think it's Richie says, huh, that's weird. He didn't stutter once and follows him in.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because like all of a sudden he was in that different persona.
Yeah.
But in the book, of course, you know that there's the turtle.
Yep. There's a turtle god.
There is a turtle. And there's also the other. Because in the book, of course, the turtle dies.
Okay, I missed that.
No.
Because the climax of the book was a little bit hard for me to follow because we're jumping between adults and kids. And
yeah, it goes back and forth.
I'm not
constantly.
Always sure what timeline we're in, and then there's a turtle, and I missed the other. I missed the turtle dying. I just...
The first time that Bill went in to the mind of it, in trying to rid the world of it, he got thrust into the darkness of it. And in the darkness, he comes across the turtle. Now, it knows about the turtle because it is the evil portion. And it, see, that's the other thing. They don't even tell you how it originated.
No, which I don't need.
No.
He's just eternal and omnipotent.
Right. But they don't even bring that across in the movie.
No, they don't.
They bring it out beautifully in the book.
Yeah. And in the book, you actually get a couple of chapters that are from its point of view, which I thought was really cool. And it happens way late in the book.
Yeah. Very late.
Like, all of a sudden, you're in its head, and it's really unnerving to hear how it talks about, you know.
Everything.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah. But the other thing is that the turtle is the one who, and excuse the terminology, vomits up the universe. He got a sick tummy one day, and he vomited, and the universe was brought into being.
Yeah, it's all very chaotic.
Very chaotic,
It's not an intelligent design.
No.
It's just there. And also, the turtle's very ambivalent.
Yeah. No, he really doesn't. He's apathetic.
Yeah, apathetic.
Yeah.
And he doesn't care about the day-to-day affairs of
could care less.
His accidental creations. He's just kind of there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, late in the book, the turtle, you know, Bill's reaching out in his mind for the turtle to help him. And it feels him reaching for it. And he says, no, that old turtle, he's dead. He doesn't exist anymore.
I do vaguely remember this. Are we meant to believe that's true?
Yes, okay. It is true. But somebody had to create the turtle and somebody had to create it. That other is what the power is that's leading the adult into, you know, being able to channel the other's power to kill it. Who, you know, in case you don't know, is a female. who's pregnant.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It lays eggs.
It lays eggs, you know, and for, poor Ben has to stomp them all.
The first time ever? Like, it's existed for millions of years.
Well, it's been just, you know, in gestation for
It's just, you know, this
forever.
These millions of years are like a blink in its life cycle.
Yeah, it means nothing to it. It's very short. I think it's very interesting when they talk in the book. I know we're talking more about the creature itself, but the creature itself has never felt pain until the children hurt it.
Yeah.
And it's a whole new experience. And it's, and you get that in the book. You get when it is talking about, how can this be? What?
Yeah.
And you just sit there and you just kind of snicker like, yeah, got you, bitch. Of course, you don't know yet that it's a girl.
Yeah, I feel like it also, you know, experiences more pain when the eggs are destroyed. Like,
yes.
That's a very visceral moment.
It is, because it can actually feel its children being killed.
Yeah. And so, that's very relatable. Yeah, I mean, any living thing is protective of its young.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And she wasn't able to protect them,
mm-hmm.
you know, because she was hurt.
I find it really interesting that it seems to be afraid of the loser club.
Yeah.
When they're kids, they have an advantage over it because they're more imaginative.
Right.
And that's the great thing about
they believe.
The book is that you fight it with faith.
Yes.
You fight it with imagination. And so they're afraid of a werewolf and it becomes a werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
And then they know, like, they use silver bullets on it and it works because it's a werewolf, because they believe it will work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really cool to me.
Right.
As adults, they're kind of...
They've lost a lot of their belief
they've
system.
They've lost that imagination, but since they know it, it's still dangerous. Like, since they know things will work, it's still mm-hmm. dangerous kind of thing. But I like that it basically manipulates their entire lives. It sends them away from Derry. It makes them very successful so that they never have any reason to come back.
Yep, because it doesn't think they will come back.
No. I mean, they've forgotten Derry. They're mm-hmm. very happy and successful.
Yep.
There's no reason for them to come back. But except for Mike.
Yep. Mike stays.
Mike stays behind as...
Poor Mike, who makes $11,000 a year as a librarian.
Yeah, because he never left. And you got to think that if he left, he would have forgotten everything and become very successful.
And then they never would have come back.
But he does what's right and he stays behind. One thing mm-hmm. I love about Mike, his race is not established until way late in the book.
I know. It's established early in the movie, obviously, because you have no choice. Movie,
yeah, because you have to cast them. But it's really interesting.
Yeah, when you don't know he's black for a long time.
Because I knew one of them was black, and I was reading the book. I was like, which one is it? Because they don't say. And then all of a sudden, he's talking to his father.
About the black spot.
About the black spot and his time in the military and the discrimination. He's like, oh, okay, that's the guy.
Right.
I didn't know until this part in the...
Yeah, you're like a third of the way through the book at that point. Yeah.
Which is wonderful that mm-hmm. we have a character of color that's not defined by his race. He's defined by this calling to protect his... He's like, stand guard.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's... I also didn't like in the movie that they killed his parents off.
Yeah.
And he was raised by this grandfather who was just kind of like, you know, an asshole, basically, mm-hmm. I thought. Because his father, even when he was dying on his deathbed with cancer, he was still so important to his son.
Yeah.
And even when Mike couldn't think of anything to say to him, he still went to the hospital every night and he still sat with him and they talked.
And he made notes. He's like, he's chronicling his father's story.
Which probably was one of the reasons why he was such a good chronicler later in life when mm-hmm. he had to keep track of everything for everyone else.
Yeah, because in the book, Mike is the historian of the group.
Yep.
And he's the researched record keeper. It.
Yeah.
In the movie, it's Ben.
Right.
Which makes a bit of sense when they're kids, because Ben is a bookworm.
He's new.
He always spends time in the library because mm-hmm. he's always bullied and always picked on.
Right.
But in the movie, at least the adult Mike, that's his role.
Yeah.
And I hope they give that back to him, because Mike, the kid, doesn't have anything to do in the movie. Other than, you know, get over his fear of butchering. What was he? A guilt or
killing,
something?
Killing sheep.
Sheep, yeah.
Yeah, he had to bung him in the head.
It's a bit of a metaphor.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. And not a really good one.
No, it's
because he doesn't do it in the book.
Because, yeah, it's not part of his character in the book. It just feels like they took away the historian thing and then didn't have anything to replace it with.
Yeah.
But he is the one who kills Henry, which in the book is Eddie, when they're adults.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, I would have enjoyed seeing on film, because Eddie is kind of the lanky, weird one.
Right.
For him to take on, like, Jason Voorhees, Henry Bowers.
Yeah.
and actually win.
Well, and in the movie, I was very disappointed. These kids were all supposed to be the same age. So you've got Bill and Ben, I mean, they look like 11-year-old boys. Uh-huh. And you've got Henry Bowers and...
Oh, yeah. Henry's considerably older.
I mean, he looks like he's in high school. Mm-hmm. And they've got them all decked out, you know, as, you know, kind of biker guys. You know, I'm sorry. That's not an 11-year-old kid.
No.
And
he's got a mullet and a car. I mean...
Yeah.
He seems to be in high school. They don't actually say that, but he's just picking on these 11-year-olds.
Yeah, but they're supposed to be in the same... Because
yeah.
Ben and Henry are supposed to be in the same class. That's why he gets so mad at Ben.
That's
is because
right.
Henry doesn't help it, or Henry wants to copy his paper and Ben says, you know, bug off.
I mean, and there's an implication that Henry's been held back at least a couple of times.
Oh, at least once.
But still, he should kind of feel like in
he
the same...
He should be in the same age group.
Yeah.
I mean, you could be the bigger kid, you know, the bully and, you know, the class and stuff. Those kids usually were the big kids, but to be... looking like high schoolers compared to, you know, mm-hmm. grade schoolers just didn't make sense in the movie.
Yeah. Henry's friend, Patrick, has my favorite death in the book.
Yeah.
And it's completely dumbed down in the movie where just Pennywise gets him. I don't even think you see it.
No, you don't even see it.
Maybe the water turns red as, you know, blood or something. But in the book, Bev stumbles upon the group hanging out.
Yeah, and they're lighting farts.
They're lighting farts and, like, masturbating each other.
Right.
Yeah, they're... Or,
no,
it was... it's Patrick and Henry.
Yeah,
like
after the other guys leave.
Yeah, and, you know, Patrick offers to give him a blowjob.
Right.
And he says, no, I'm not a faggot. I'm not a, you know, get away from me. And
But he let him do... He let him hand job.
Hand.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, I guess.
There's a distinct line, I guess. So a lot of repressed sexual, which makes sense with the sort of uber macho bully anyway.
And this is in the 50s. This is in the late 50s, too. I mean,
nobody was gay. Yeah.
And if they were, well, in the book, remember, they used to throw the gays off that one bridge.
That was in the 80s, though.
That was in the...
Yeah.
Was that in the 80s?
Because that's what sparks Mike starting to research the new cycle.
You're right.
Yeah.
I thought that was in the 50s.
No,
you're right. Yeah, because that's back when. Okay. So, yeah. So now it's in the 80s and
it's
you know,
it's
gay
a bit
pride
more free. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a, you know, people are actively rebelling against.
Of course, the two characters that he writes for that are so flaming. I'm sorry, but even in the 80s, they would have been tossed off a bridge. That's just the way it was.
Well, in the 80s, they would have been.
Yeah, in the 80s, they would have been, especially in a small town.
Especially the
Maine.
One guy who, you know, dies.
Yeah.
He's very flamboyant, but I like with his character, I don't remember his name.
I don't either.
How much pride he has in Derry. Like,
oh,
that's his thing.
Oh.
He's wearing an I Heart Derry hat.
Yeah.
He loves being in this small town. He thinks
he loves it.
And beautiful. And then, yeah, he's like lynched essentially.
Yeah.
And then
it was terrible.
And then there's conflicting reports about a clown, and a clown got him. I was like, well, and then the police are investigating. Well, I can't tell you a clown got it. We have to pin it on this guy, so there's a guy to pin it on.
Right.
Yeah, it's all very cool.
Yeah, and the police are so clueless for most of it. But you get one or two of them that actually, you know, thinks a little bit more, but then they come under the fog of Derryism.
A lot of adults, like, can't perceive Pennywise, can't mm-hmm. see his actions, so...
They don't believe.
I mean, yeah. So...
But there was also...
They're forced to find alternate explanations for things.
But there's also a point in the book where they talk about the one church tower clock that when the ironworks exploded and when a couple of other big, you know, like the big endings for the Pennywise feeding cycle.
Yeah.
The clock doesn't ring when those things happen. Hmm. It comes very late in the book and... One of the adults is just realizing that it doesn't ring for some reason. I can't remember which adult it is.
I don't remember this at all.
it's near the end, but they're talking about that. So the morning that of the Easter Sunday that they had the ironworks exploded,
yeah,
and they were having the Easter egg hunt. It was noted in the church record or something that the clock didn't chime for some reason.
Okay.
And it's noted somewhere else that it didn't go off for another big incident. And somebody just starts putting those together because then, of course, in the end of the book, near the end of the book, when they're talking about, you know, this massive mini hurricane right over the town of Derry and everything is blowing up, mm-hmm, and toilets are exploding and the well pipe falls.
Doesn't the movie theater like sink into an earthquake or something?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the town doctor who goes out jogging walking every single morning at a certain time, he goes out and gets decapitated by a flying manhole cover and, mm-hmm, you know, walks three steps before he falls, you know, that kind of, you know, imagery. But that church tower in that little mini cyclone thing gets destroyed into 1,000 pieces, and its only witness is, I think, oh no, that was the standpipe falling. The other thing blowing up was, I can't remember who it is now. Ah, I hate it when my memory goes. But the standpipe, when that topples and explodes all over the place and drowns half of the town under a deluge of tons and tons of water, mm-hmm, the only guy who witnessed it is some guy who's so high on pot he can barely walk. And he's like, oh, man, cool. And you're just like, okay, you need to smoke a little less.
It's the 80s, man.
It's the 80s, man. I know. Believe me, I remember.
It'll be interesting because in the movie, the first movie takes place in the 80s.
Yeah.
And so the second movie will be modern day.
Yeah, which I thought might take... I wasn't sure why it took place in the 80s when it should have taken place in the 50s.
It's just so they want the sequel to be modern day. That's it.
I guess because there were so many references in the 50s to specific things that obviously they didn't put in the movie.
Well, there were 80s references, though.
Yeah.
Because we know specifically it takes place in 89, I think, because they see a Batman, the movie marquee.
And yeah,
like a Back to the Future 3 thing, I think.
But see, the thing is that these kids, the reason they see the werewolf and the mummy and Frankenstein
is because they watch these
because
old
these were the
movies.
50s.
Yeah.
Those were the 50s Saturday afternoon, mm-hmm, movies that you went and paid $2 to go see.
Yeah, that's how Richie kind of gets involved with the rest of the group, is he keeps trying to bribe people to go to the movies.
Go to the movie. Yeah, because, you know, hey, I earned $2. Let's go to the movies. You know?
Richie, by the way, the other horribly terrible character that I cannot stand to read.
I know.
But he's so good in the movie.
Yeah.
The kid they got for Richie, and I can't remember his name. It's Finn Wolfslayer or something like that. It's actually really cool. It's Finn Wolfhard, I think.
I don't know.
He's from Stranger Things, and he's, mm-hmm, his Richie is
That's
so
where
on
he's
point.
From.
Yeah, he's from Stranger Things. And because Richie is not constantly doing voices, or he's just really funny.
Yeah.
He's legitimately funny and not just doing kooky voices.
Right.
And yeah, so I was really impressed with how they improved on the Richie character.
Yeah, because in the book, he kind of drives you crazy.
Drives me absolutely insane in the book.
But the Irish cop voice comes in very important in the killing or the harming of Pennywise when they were kids.
Right. Remind me.
Well, he's going to do the stinger. It's going to use its stinger, mm-hmm, to sting Bill. And all of a sudden, Richie spouts off with his Irish cop voice and in the voice he has never used before, telling him, belay that and put down that, you fine boyo, or something like that. And even Bill realizes.
Spot on Irish accent, by the way.
Right. Spot on. Thank you. But even Bill knows it's not normally how Richie sounds. And it was very important because it hurt it into not being able to use the stinger.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you don't see the stinger in the movie, so you have no idea what I'm talking about if all you saw
You don't see its true form in the movie. Like,
no,
that's
never.
That's going to be for the adults to face the big spider monster.
Yeah, if they use a spider. Well, you've already got one thing that most people hate is clowns. Then the next thing is spiders.
Spiders is a pretty good fear trigger. I think they'll probably stick with a spider. I mean, I think it'll be inspired by a spider. It probably won't look like a big spider.
Yeah. Because even the way they describe it in the book, it's spider-ish.
Yeah. It's like spider-esque. That's
the closest thing that their brains can come up with.
Yeah. And I imagine it'll have clown elements. Like, mm-hmm. it'll still look like Pennywise.
It'll have, like, you know, orange dots down its belly or something.
Yeah. It'll be a weird, gross mutation spider Pennywise.
Yeah.
I like the kid who plays Pennywise too, by the way.
Oh,
I thought he was good.
He did. Now, I gotta say, for the movie, that's one that I was worried about, because the clown has to have that malleable face to mm-hmm. be able to, like a Jim Carrey could do him.
Yeah.
You know? And so I was a little concerned, but when I saw him in the movie, I was actually quite impressed that they really did a good job with his face.
Yeah, it's on the grin.
It's all in the grin. If you don't have an evil grin, forget it.
I got sidetracked talking about Patrick.
Sorry.
That's okay. It was my fault too, because we got talking about homosexuality in the 80s. But Patrick's death, he comes across a refrigerator mm-hmm. that's full of these like pods. And they all come to life like bats, and they're like these flying leech things that cling to him and he's afraid of leeches in massive quantities. And just basically rip them apart, and it's horrifying to read.
Oh yes.
And I can't imagine like watching it in a film, but I kind of wanted that more than anything else from the book.
Oh really? I was kind of hoping they'd skip that, because I really don't like leeches too much unless they're used as a medical
It might have treatment. Actually nauseated me, but I would have been like, oh god, that's exactly how I imagined it. Kind of thing.
See, you're just lucky they didn't have the giant eyeball. Yeah, the thing that Richie saw was the giant eyeball.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't like eyeballs. When he saw the giant eye, well, it was, you know, the invasion of the giant eye or something was the one that he saw.
I could have handled a giant eyeball, but seeing flying leech things drain someone's blood.
Yeah, no, that's not cool.
Yeah.
No.
Because the way I imagine it, they don't have like round leech things. They have like stingers that inject and clamp on and then they get all fat with blood like really quickly,
and then
that
would have been gross.
But I do like, one of my favorite scenes in the book is when Richie and Bill, because Bill finds out that it is staying in this old abandoned house on Niebolt mm-hmm. Street, and he decides to get his dad's gun and go down there and take care of it. And Richie goes along to try and talk him out of it.
Yes.
And all Richie has on him as a weapon is sneezing powder.
Right. I love this.
I know. It's amazing. Because, and again, it plays into, you know, you can
childhood
fight it
with imagination.
This imagination with faith that it's going to work. So he has to believe his sneezing powder will work. And it does. And he, like, it's about to kill them. And he blows sneezing powder in its face. And goes, and it slinks away. I'm really glad that worked.
Well, and talk about faith and belief. You know, then you've got Eddie with his little aspirator.
Yes.
And all it is basically sterile water with camphor in it.
It gives it a little medicine smell.
Yeah, it's a placebo. It does absolutely nothing for him, but his mother's been convinced for years that he has asthma, and this is how the doctor...
Asthma, among other things.
Everything.
He's the most fragile boy ever.
Yes, it's amazing he can stand on his own two legs.
I'm surprised he doesn't just keep him in a bubble in his room.
Yeah. In fact, today's parents, maybe they would have.
Yeah.
But he takes this aspirator and he imagines with all his heart and soul that it's filled with acid. Hydrochloric acid. It's the worst acid he can think of. And then he sprays it right into the creature. And because he believed it, the creature mm-hmm. was harmed. And that was awesome.
It's all really cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the idea that it's afraid of them, like we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And I like that all the rules concerning how it works aren't spelled out for us.
No, you have to guess.
Yeah, a lot of it's up to our interpretation. But, you know, you just accept some of the crazier things as a science that we can't possibly comprehend with our little human brains.
Right.
Because this is an ancient, demonic, omnipotent
being.
God that can do whatever it wants.
Yep.
And has been on Earth so long that it has influence kind of over most of the mm-hmm. planet. Because it can, as they leave Derry, it still can manipulate their lives.
I was kind of hoping that they would do, when they did the smokehouse when they did the smoke. And
oh, they didn't do the dam.
No, they didn't do the dam.
I just realized they didn't do the dam.
They didn't do the dam. They didn't do the hole in the ground clubhouse. Yeah. They didn't do any of that. And so much of that could have been utilized so well in this movie. And they just left it out. But the when they did the smokehouse, and it was Mike and Richie that went back, right? They're the two that went back in time, back to the beginning, and they saw.
I thought it was just Bill. I thought it was just Bill.
No, Bill couldn't take it. He had to get out. Everybody had to get out. Ben had to get out. Bev had to get out. They couldn't take all the smoke, so they climbed out.
But Mike and Richie have like a spirit quest and see arrival.
And they see its arrival a billion years ago in a comet. It looks like a comet, but they know that it's. They know it's the Barrens because the general shape is the same.
Yeah.
A lot of the plants they don't recognize. Some of the fauna they don't recognize. But they see this thing coming and it lands and it explodes. And they realize that they're witnessing its arrival.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my God, it has always been here. And that's when you realize just how old, how ancient this evil is. And basically, dairy is just its little supermarket.
And the fact that it's omnipresent.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of, from then.
It can affect anybody within its
you
radius.
You kind of feel safe thinking it's just a clown, a shape-shifting clown, but it's mostly one entity, one place. And really, it's kind of everywhere.
Yeah. Because it can literally turn off the minds of all the adults.
Yeah.
Like when Bev is being chased by Henry Bowers et al. And they've got the knife and he's gonna kill her. Because he's so angry with her, he's gonna kill her. Because, well, she kicked him in the nuts, so he felt she deserved it.
Yeah.
And the man on the porch, she's yelling, and this man on the porch literally just folds up his paper, turns his back, and walks in the house.
Oh, I didn't think about it being its influence. I figured
no.
It was just like small town 50s.
No.
This is not my business.
No, okay. It was all his influence, because then when they come back as adults, and of course, you know, the owner of the restaurant can't see the bloody stuff and the balloons and everything else that's there and the fortune cookies that have gross shit coming out of them. It's influencing everyone's mind.
Yeah, it can definitely shape perspective. Because the other big example is when Bev's sink explodes with blood.
Right, yeah, and her father doesn't see it at all.
Father can't see it, which I thought was done really well in the movie.
That was actually done better in the movie than I thought in the book. Because in the book, I just kind of got the impression that it's spouted up and, you know, hit a few things.
It gets everywhere.
And then when they come in to clean it.
Yep.
Now, I'm glad they kept that because they could see it. And she just couldn't use that bathroom as long as it looked that way. You know, and since she could see it, it had to be clean. And they were that was almost that.
And maybe that's
group.
A better bonding moment than building the dam. Because in the book, they build the dam and that kind of brings them together on a shared project.
But then they
get caught by some adult and they immediately have to take it down.
Right.
But the cleaning up the blood is a really big scene.
But in the movie, that's, you know, I mean, in the book, it's not an adult. It's Henry Bowers who comes and kicks it down.
No, I thought.
That's right. No, the Irish cop.
Yeah, it's like a cop comes and catches them. It's like, you guys can't be down here building dams.
Do you know what this is going to do to the town?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, because that was the second dam.
No, that was the one. Does Henry destroy one? And then
Henry destroys the, quote, baby dam. And then Ben, who is the bookwormish and future engineer, is the architect, is the guy who actually builds a dam that works. And unfortunately, it works too well because the guy from town comes and goes, hey, guy, I was sent down here to find out why, you know, this stuff is backlogged. Please don't do this.
It's flooding back here. There's nothing going down there. You can't just put a dam wherever you want.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, you know, you said that the movie was set in the 80s. And maybe the reason for that is that in the book, in the 50s, the town, all the town sewage and everything went into these rivers and streams. And maybe by the 80s, of course, that wouldn't have been allowed anymore, obviously. But maybe it wouldn't come across that they're literally slogging through, you know, sewage to get to it. And maybe that wouldn't have made as much sense to today's audiences when they used to just dump all that stuff in the river. And it really didn't matter.
Yeah.
Until things died. Like everything.
I'm trying to remember other things from when they're adult. I like when Bev goes home as an adult and she meets the old lady who's living in her old house.
Oh, yeah, that was
good. And it turns out to just be it.
Yeah, it's it. Yeah. And the house is not really there, or it's there, but it's a dump.
Yeah, it's not, it's not this quaint little cottage. No. It's this rundown, rotten.
Yeah, well, it was a tenement, and it was just,
And I think it also becomes her father, or the woman speaks in her father's voice.
It says, it starts changing and starts saying, my father, you know, and then I'm also my mother, and I'm my father. And it goes in and on and on and on. And you sit there and you go, okay, this ain't no pretty little old lady. This is it. And it takes her a little while to figure it out. And then she has to get out. And of course, then running into the street and almost getting hit by a car.
Yeah.
Because she's just in a panic at that point.
Also, at the same time, Ben goes back to the library.
Yeah.
And gets a new library card just for nostalgia's sake.
Right. And the book and everything. Yeah.
And then Pennywise starts tormenting him, and he's the only one who can see and hear him.
Yeah. All the balloons. Yeah. The balloons is an interesting vehicle, I think, for how he gets his message, because it's always floating. We all float down here.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm wondering how, there's never really an explanation of how that came to be.
Mm-hmm. Because unlike the movie, it doesn't seem to tie into like actual floating. It's just like, I guess once you're in the deadlights and.
Well, they look like they're floating in the cocoon of the web.
Right. Okay.
That's it. Yeah. I don't know. Oh, and
that does make
him
sense.
Putting Bev in that little trancy thing in the movie.
Okay.
That was dumb.
Let's talk about this.
That was dumb.
Yeah, Bev in the movie is taken hostage by it so that the boys have a damsel in distress to save.
Yeah, which is...
I hate that.
It was awful.
Like,
it
Bev
was probably
is the most capable
worst
character in the movie, and I feel like they really ruined her by having her be this
she
victim.
She could basically kick all those boys' ass, and there's just no way. I was so mad at that.
And because I wanted to bring it up in regards to the sex scene.
Yeah.
When they're kids.
Yes.
Which...
They don't do in the movie, obviously.
And I'm happy they cut it, but not for the same reason that everyone else seems to be happy they cut it. Because in the book, I actually thought it was kind of beautiful.
It was. It was their true bonding moment.
Yeah.
Secondary to the slicing of the hands and taking the bond.
And the oath. Yeah. The blood oath.
Yeah.
I've heard it described as an orgy, and I've heard it described as a gangbang. It's not either.
No, it's not either.
It's six sequential sex scenes where they each have their own intimate moment with Bev. And it's kind of wonderful.
And it's empowering to her because she suddenly realizes that how powerful she is as a female. They all become powerful because they are now aware. They're more aware of themselves as males.
Yeah.
And let's face it, at 11 or 12 years old, that just doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. You know, it's usually much later. It's usually much messier. It's usually with a lot more guilt, you know, but for them, it was a bonding moment.
Yeah, it bonds them together as a group forever, for sure. Mm-hmm. But also, like, once you have battled an immortal evil god, something like sex seems so benign. I was like, you're already an adult at that point.
Right. Well, and if you think about it, the exact opposite of evil is pure love.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were expressing for each other was pure
love.
That's
absolutely true. Yeah, it's unadulterated, uncut love. That's a good way to look at it.
Yep.
I'm thrilled they cut it from the movie simply because
they would have screwed it up.
Well, I mean, it would have been done poorly, I'm sure. But because they make Bev a victim, if she then has sex with all the guys, it's like, thank you for saving me.
Yeah.
Now I owe you.
Yeah.
Screw that. So, yeah, I really wanted to bring up the sex scene because as it was happening, I was like, this is kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the book, especially if you listen to the audiobook, you know, you can imagine them all in the dark. You can imagine her not really knowing what she's doing, but knowing she has to do something.
Yeah, she knows enough about the mechanics of it.
Yeah, because her father always accused her of, you know, I gotta worry about you, Bev.
I hear you running around with these boys and let me check to see if you're still intact.
Yeah, which, you know, you sit there and go, you know. Of course, that wouldn't happen in the 80s. Well, it might. Anyway, the idea that through the process of it, I also thought it was very interesting that the one that, so there goes Eddie, there goes Stan.
I remember Eddie's first, and then there's,
it's
like Stan and Mike and Richie all kind of blend together.
Yeah, they kind of blend together. But then Ben is the true, she feels the true feeling.
Yeah. She actually, with Ben, is able to enjoy what it's supposed to be.
Right. And then, of course, because she really loves Bill, that's even better.
I don't know, better, but different.
Different. Okay, maybe that's it.
Like the perfect way to end the whole process.
More the emotional.
Yeah.
With Ben, it was the physical
epitome. Yeah, there's a real passion there, and then there's a real emotional connection with Bill.
So anyway, with Ben, it's the physical culmination. And with Bill, it's the emotional culmination. Yeah. And I think that that all together makes it a full circle.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Bill and Bev have sex when they're adults.
Yes.
Which is also very fulfilling for both of them.
Extremely. Yeah, because they're actually with the person they should have been with all along.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Is like normally adultery would really bother me.
Yeah, normally it would me too.
Especially because Bill is in a happy marriage with but this Bill seemingly
basically,
great woman.
Yeah, but Bill basically married a Bev analog.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, and Bev married Bev.
He's forgotten Bev. He's forgotten how he feels about Bev. So to have those memories come back to him, those feelings, you can't just ignore it.
Well, and realize that the woman that he married looks exactly like Bev and has a lot of the same attributes. You know, that's, you know, you can understand that happening even on a subconscious level. Because remember, he's writing from a subconscious level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of his novels are from his subconscious. And in some tiny little corner of his brain, you just know that he remembers Bev.
Yeah.
And that wasn't anything he could ever let go of. So, which is kind of neat, you know, in a weird way, for a Stephen King way.
Yeah, I think it's done really well.
Yeah, it really is.
And, you know, when Audra comes back into the scene, he realizes how much he cares for her and works so hard to get her back. And she goes catatonic from the trauma of, you know,
seeing
being cocooned.
It.
And and you said you didn't quite finish the
I haven't quite. I'm reading the book. On the last chapter.
Okay.
Which is okay. You can tell me how it ends.
Well, it flashes forward a little bit.
Okay.
Audra's still catatonic.
Right.
And Bill is caring for her. I think I'm pretty sure they're still in Derry.
Oh, okay.
And he's been trying for months just to get through to her. And what he does is sits her on his bike, his old bike.
Oh, Silver.
Silver. Which he finds as an adult as at like a pawn
shop. Yeah, it's like a pawn shop. Yeah.
And he takes it and he fixes it at Mike's and gets it cleaned up. He sits,
and Mike just happens to have the tire patch kit and all that other stuff that he just bought 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, because there's like, you know, I kind of sensed you would need it kind of thing going on. So he sits Audra like on the handlebars and he sits on Silver and goes down like this incredibly steep hill and Audra snaps out of her
catatonia. Yeah.
And, you know, grips Bill and is like, what is going on? And she's excited and terrified. And at the end of it, she's back.
Right.
Which is a little easy, but the fairy tale we've kind of established here makes some sense.
Yeah, it's a happy ending.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What happens to Bev?
I believe.
Because Tom's dead, right?
Tom dies. Which I missed, but they talk about it at the very end.
Yeah.
Because I missed, like, I kept waiting for him to show up. And
because remember, he was crumpled at, like, the bottom of the web.
Okay.
Because somebody recognized him. And when she recognized him, she couldn't decide whether she was happy or glad.
Yeah.
That he was happy or glad. broken, happy or glad, yeah. Happy or sad that he's this crumpled, broken mass. Yes. Yeah. Because he took a beating. She beat him.
Yeah, but he was a big part of her life. And her feelings for him are very complicated.
Right.
I believe her and Ben end up together.
Oh, good.
I think. At least they should. They do in the TV movie. Now I can't remember if they do in the book.
Okay. Well, then good. I've got something to look forward to in the next chapter.
Yeah.
Because I literally am at the end. Mm-hmm. I just haven't gotten through the final chapter and the epilogue are the only two things I have to do yet.
Oh, we should talk about Stan's suicide.
Oh, Stan. Well, see, and in the book, when he committed suicide, I had no idea why.
Oh, sure, because it's like the second chapter.
Yeah, you have no idea why this man goes up into his bathtub, slits his wrists, and dies.
Yeah, he gets a phone call. He says everything's fine and goes upstairs and kills himself. Yeah,
and his wife is completely baffled, and everybody's completely baffled. And it was almost like Mike expected it. But Stan, as a child, is the neatnik. He's the kid whose clothes are always perfect. His hair is always combed. He's a bird watcher. He has his bird book in his back pocket. And the birds are what get him out of trouble with it when he's a child. He just names off birds. Remember when he goes into the ironworks? He's supposed to find something and take it back to his dad, and the big bird that comes and tries to get him.
Yeah.
Well, the way he is able to get away from the bird is, first of all, he stabs it with a piece of tile or something. But then he also starts yelling out bird names. And he just goes one after another, after another, after another, and the bird can't come near him. It flies away. It makes him defenseless.
Yeah. So again, it works because he believed it was going to work.
Because he believed it was going to work. Even though he didn't know what he was doing, he believed it was going to work. But I don't understand why he kills himself as an adult. Because later they say that Stan knew it's what it really looked like. Maybe he never forgot what it really looked like.
Because I think once he gets the call, like everyone else, the memory starts to come back.
Yeah, I think that came back
at once. So traumatic for him that he knows he's too much of a coward to go back to Derry.
Yeah.
But he's also too much of a coward to live with that
cowardice. With that knowledge, yeah. It's not really clear in the book.
No, it's not.
And I almost wish it had been, because at some point I wish they had said all of Stan's memories, you know, hit him full force, and he couldn't live with that. You know, because I think that since it was his idea to make the bond, to cut their hands and make the blood bond, you know, when they were children, that was...
I'm not sure it was his idea, because he...
Yeah, it was Stan.
Because when they get to him, and it's his turn to say, you know, I'll come back, make the oath, make the promise, he hesitates.
I thought he's sure...
He's the
was
one
that
who
in the
hesitates.
Movie, or
no,
was
that's
that
the book.
In-
I remember that distinctly.
I thought he was the one in the book that actually said, this is what we have to do. But I could be wrong. It's been a long book.
Yeah, it's a very long book. And, you know, and sometimes the characters kind of bleed into each other. Yeah. The TV movie in the 90s is structured interestingly because the first half is basically centered around those six phone calls.
Yeah.
To the adults. Right. And we keep flashing back to the kids stuff.
Right.
During all those
But that's
calls.
How they that's how the book is written too.
Yeah, but it's like the entire first half of the movie rather than chapter 2.
Okay.
And then whereas Stanley kills himself at the first part of chapter 2, he actually kills himself at the end of that. That's the cliffhanger for the first part of it.
Oh, okay.
So we see all these flashbacks of the kids and them dealing with Pennywise and Georgie's death and all this stuff, and then it ends with Stan unable to go back to it.
Okay.
And kills himself in the bathtub.
Okay, that actually makes more sense to me.
Yeah, so they really play with, you know, that jumping back and forth structure really well. I mean,
it's stupid.
It's campy, but they did do some things really well with that.
Yeah.
And Tim Curry plays Pennywise very well.
That was the one thing that I might have watched it because I like Tim
he
Curry
He seems
for
to
that
really
stuff.
Delight in playing Pennywise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But of course, if you ever saw Rocky Horror Picture Show, you would know how he likes that stuff.
Absolutely. He had a
playing
lot of fun with it. Yeah. He definitely had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
What else is there? It seems like there should be a ton of stuff we haven't hit on yet.
There's just so much because it's such a long book.
I know.
But I think we've hit all the high points. I think if somebody really wants a very good in your brain but long book.
Yeah, I chipped away at this over the course of like 6 months.
Yeah. See, and the first time I read it, I couldn't put it down. But then again, you know how I read.
Yeah.
You know, I read start to finish, and sometimes I sleep. And that's how I read it the first time. This time, of course, I'm listening to it on audiobook, so I'm only listening to it in the car.
Yeah. Granted, I was only reading it during plasma donation.
Yeah.
So, like, two hours a week.
Right. So basically, for me, it was 2 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Well, less than that. Maybe an hour and a half a day between going there and coming home. And it's taking me forever because you know how long it's been. Since you asked me to do this.
Yeah.
But of course, I just started going back to St. Joe, you know,
Regularly,
yeah. A month and a half ago. So I figured tomorrow I'll probably finish it on my drives to and from. So, but it's a good book. I thought the movie was meh. Yeah. I wouldn't pay to see it again.
I was disappointed by the movie.
Yeah, I would not pay
to see it. I'm glad it's doing well.
Yeah.
It like grossed $500 million.
Did it really?
Yeah, and it only cost like $32 million to make. It was a very cheap movie.
Yeah.
And it's just a killer success.
Yeah.
So now they're going to do the sequel, obviously.
I'll probably have to go to see the sequel just to see.
I definitely will too, and I hope they up the game.
I hope so too.
I hope they really make it uncomfortable. It's a little mainstream.
Yeah. And which really surprises me. I mean, with the stuff that they're coming out with in movies nowadays, that should be the least of their worries.
I think maybe, like, with the rating system, you can't do that much to kids. I think that automatically gets you, like, an X rating.
Well,
if you are shown, like, tormenting kids.
I don't know. I don't know how they do that anymore.
I don't know either.
The stuff that they call PG now is what would have been, you know, R plus plus when I was a kid.
I mean, famously, like, Midnight Cowboy was rated X when it came out.
I know. I think that's hysterical. They showed it on PG TV.
Now. Yeah, it's rated PG now.
Yeah.
And it was just because of the homosexual content.
Right.
It was like the implied homosexual content. Yeah.
Yeah, there's movies that I saw when I was a kid that were rated R, you know, oh my gosh, ooh, we're going to go and see an R-rated movie, you know, we were too young. And now it's like, oh, that's the movie that's on Saturday night now on TV?
Yeah.
I don't want to sit through the commercials. You know?
Yeah.
It's not worth sitting through the commercials.
There's an interesting documentary about kind of the history of how the Motion Picture Association of America works now with the rating system.
Yeah, it's nothing like it used to.
I mean, everyone who works there is like their identities are secret. It's a really kind of right-wing organization.
I wouldn't call it right-wing.
No, they're very conservative.
Well, yeah. They may be conservative, but I still wouldn't call them right-wing. I consider most of them clueless and with no... I mean, I'm a right-wing conservative, and I am not as clueless as these people.
Yeah. It's a lot about, you know, forcing a moral agenda.
Yeah, I mean, if there were specific guidance as to what content equals what, then any schmo could do it.
Yeah,
you know, watch the movie and go, okay, well, let's see here. We see boobs, we see butt. Who doesn't? They do that on TV now. So, you know, oh, it's got the S word. You know.
No, S word's not a problem.
No, nothing seems to be a problem. Well, maybe the F word is a problem now, but
yeah.
That'll be the next one to fall. I mean, I can remember when you could not say hell, damn. Mm-hmm. You couldn't say butt. You had to say buttocks.
Well, I mean, I think it's Psycho or something famously is the first movie to show a flushing toilet. Because that was seen as obscene before.
Yeah,
then.
That was what show was it? The first couple to be in the same bed. Brady Bunch.
Oh.
First couple in the same bed. Of course, them sheets never moved and the pillows were perfect. And there was 3 feet between the two of them.
Star Trek was the first interracial kiss.
Yes, and I remember seeing that episode.
I remember... We're getting off track.
We're going to wrap
up with it anyway. Like, they wanted Shatner to do a take where he just gives her a hug.
Yeah.
And he, like, every time they shot it, he would, like, do a funny face, so it was unusable.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him. Yeah, it's amazing what we accept now is, you know, things that we wouldn't accept before. But I'll tell you something. In reality, there are some things that we accept now that I wish we still didn't accept. I think that, especially in movies, I think there are things that a 12-year-old shouldn't see. I think that there are things that you should have to be an adult.
Well, that's why having a rating system is important.
But it doesn't work.
But I'm not a fan of censorship. Enforced. I just feel like it should be categorized.
No, I don't believe in censorship. Not one little bit. I think that's wrong. But I don't think that as a parent, and maybe this is because I'm a parent and back then when I wasn't, it didn't matter to me or I thought it was silly. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that a lot of parents today, especially, and I'm sorry, but you know, you got some parents that are the helicopter moms, you know, they're right over them, you know, and they worry about every little germ, but they'll send their kids off to see people having sex in a movie and not care. That makes no sense to me. you know, or, oh, I'm going to wash this binky every single time, you know, the kid drops it on the floor. But
picking and choosing what to care about.
But what I'm saying is that, you know, you have to be consistent, and they're not consistent. And back then, our parents, I think parents were a little bit more consistent. Oh, it's R? No, you can't go see it. You're not 18. Sorry. Bye. That's just the way it is. You know, and I remember you guys wanting to go see movies that I wasn't sure were completely appropriate. And I would research them before mm-hmm. I'd let you go see them. I don't know if you know that or not.
I didn't know there was research being done.
There was research being done. But there was also times when I'm sure you went with friends that I didn't know. And sometimes what a parent doesn't know ain't going to hurt them.
I mean, for our, when we were underage for R-rated stuff, it was mostly dad. Like, yeah. if we want to see something, you'd take us to see it.
Oh, yeah, he would in a heartbeat, whether I agreed or not.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd say maybe the one that I remember being really objectionable, though, like, I was definitely too young to watch it when I saw it, was Starship Troopers. Tons of gore and nudity and just... Yeah, I was very uncomfortable watching it when it came out and whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would never have allowed you to go see that.
I had no idea what I was getting into for.
Right.
I figured like Star Wars.
Right. Well, and unfortunately, that's what a lot of kids thought.
Yeah.
So a lot of kids were exposed to a lot of things that they really didn't need. And a lot of parents were clueless as to what it was because they didn't know. That one probably should have been rated X, not R.
Well, there's nothing really X-rated in it. It's just
by today's standards.
I mean, by the standards of the 90s when it came out. I mean,
yeah,
you can have graphic sexual content as long as it's between a man and a woman.
I don't know. It's just the whole rating system is kind of kerflooey anyway. Mm-hmm. I think
it's it's always tried to adapt, and it's always been kind of a weird process.
Yeah, and I've always considered myself, I'm a pretty cool mom. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, if you wanted to talk about something, we talked about it. If you wanted to go see something, we went and saw it. But there were still, I had my limits, and I had my things that I just didn't think were appropriate. And that may sound old, and I am, and it may sound old-fashioned, and yes, I am to a degree. But like I said, I'm also a conservative, mm-hmm. and I just think that there are some things that really don't need to be on a great big giant screen.
Yeah, and I just feel like, you know, the real world's always going to have much more of an effect than something you see in a movie.
It should. It should. The real world should be. I like the movies for escaping from the real world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, while
so you're
still
conscious of that escape, so you're conscious of it not being real, so it doesn't have as big of an
effect.
But
a kid is not as conscious that it's an escape as an adult.
I mean, yeah.
But I mean, there is a difference in the level of understanding.
Understand it at a fairly young age, mm-hmm. that it's not real.
Yeah. Well, we hope that they understand it.
Well, I mean, they do study these things. Yeah.
But some kids don't.
I mean, you can't generalize about all kids, but as a rule, you get to an age fairly early where you understand mm-hmm. the difference between reality and unreality.
Of course, there's shows on TV that I wouldn't let my kids watch.
Just some basic CBS shows?
Yeah, like Moms.
Oh, yeah.
I hate that program.
I haven't watched it, but like Two Broke Girls stands out. It's just like
it's the same script.
Yeah.
It's
30 minutes of dick jokes every episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And I gave up on that after like four episodes. I said, well, this is stupid.
Oh, I watched one, like Dad had it on. I was over at Dad's and I was like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. And if you saw one episode, you've seen every episode they've ever put out.
I believe that wholeheartedly.
Yes. But there's just some shows that are just plain stupid. And then there's shows that I really enjoy watching because A, they're relatively clean. You know, a good one that comes out to mind, I don't know if you've ever watched it, Last Man Standing.
The Tim Allen.
Tim Allen one.
I saw an episode and it wasn't, no, I didn't
no,
care
well,
for it.
Well, if you watch it though, it has a very, very, very liberal son-in-law. They have the unwed daughter with the baby. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, the hi, I'm so pretty middle child girl, and then they have the youngest
girl.
That's
the thing. It strikes me as like a 90s sitcom. It doesn't strike me as anything new.
Yeah, except it had a lot of political humor, but then it also pulled in, you know, it pulled in race, it pulled in gay, it pulled everything in. And it got canceled. It was at the top of the ratings for ABC, and they canceled it. You can't tell me that it wasn't because Tim Allen's a conservative. It was stupid. But anyway.
Well, why don't we wrap up?
Okay.
So that.
So you can cut out all this nonsense.
You can be a good wife and make your husband food.
No, he's going to make me food. I worked all day.
So you may remember from the last time you were on the podcast when we mm-hmm. talked about 50 Shades of Grey that we end by still one of our more popular episodes.
I've listened to it twice.
Because every time like someone's like, oh, what's your podcast about? It's like, oh, it's about guilty pleasures. And they like, they look for a suggestion for us. So, well, uh-huh. I did 50 Shades of Grey with my mom. That's a pretty good one. And they're like, sold.
Yes.
Checking that one out.
And then they think I'm either very, very weird or you are.
Oh, I hope they think we're both weird.
I hope so, too. Because they'd be right.
Because that's what I'm shooting for.
Yes, I know.
So we wrap up by talking about the guilty pleasures of the characters in the mm-hmm. subject of the episode. In this okay. case, the novel, Stephen King's It.
Yes.
And we're going to pick characters for each other to do.
What do you mean? Oh, what we liked most about?
No, you're going to pick any character you want from the book uh-huh. for me to tell you their guilty pleasure, and I'm going to pick one for you.
Okay. Let's see. For you, I would have to pick Ben.
Ben, okay. Child Ben or adult Ben?
Either. Both.
Both. My pick or both. Okay. Why don't you do It.
Ooh. Okay. You first. Since Ben. You gave me the hard one.
Let me think about it. Ben's a naturally gifted architect, engineer. He's a bookworm.
He never married.
He never married. Because he's devoted to making weird, ugly buildings. That people love.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Ben's guilty pleasure has to be something. Oh, wait, I'm almost got it. I feel like he in between his studies and his reading of his big, thick books, every once in a while he reads something really trashy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not even a book, not even like a romance book that has words, but almost like a dirty comic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which just like has weirdly exaggerated women's breasts and no story and
yeah.
just what you'd expect in the 50s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I can see that. And that would be his secret, I think.
Yeah, and it could explain why he's never had a serious relationship into adulthood because, mm-hmm. you know, you can become addicted to pornography and mm-hmm. it can warp your sense of what a real relationship should be.
Yeah, you wouldn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you really wouldn't know.
So as he's evolved into the 80s and pornography's gotten more sophisticated, what he falls back on.
Yeah, that's how he does it, mm-hmm. yeah.
So I think it's that. He's not perverted. He's not aggressive. He's just, you know, sad.
Yeah.
he's a little fat kid still inside.
Yeah, inside he's still a little fat kid. I agree. It. I think that not knowing that it is female until almost the end lends itself to a whole world of guilty pleasures.
Okay.
Does she paint her toenails?
I love the thought of Spider It sitting around like, I can't quite guess the... Oh, kill everybody!
Think about the web redecorating.
Glitter.
Oh, glitter. Well, it does glitter. It has its own light.
It does have a shimmer.
Yes, it does have a shimmer. But also things like, you know, some women want to move the furniture. Does she move the bodies? Or the body parts.
Feng shui the bodies
yeah, exactly. of her victims. You know, having her little cave just I mean, right.
When you're alive for millions of years, you got to do something to pass the time.
Oh my God, yes. And can you imagine the naps you can take when you're that old?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be some awesome nap. We figure at least 27 years.
She naps for 27 yeah. years at a time.
Yeah. Just to digest.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, there's so many things that I can see where a woman alone with her own little place decorated her own little way, you know, that and able to take those long naps and not have to worry about a man coming in mm-hmm. and all this other stuff, that it would be a pretty cool existence for a lot of females. I personally, no. You know, I'm not a toenail painter and I don't rearrange the furniture, as evidenced by the fact that it's all in the exact same place as it's been for the last since I bought it.
I was going to say like 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And it'll get changed when I buy new furniture.
Yeah.
So I'm not typical female in a lot of ways, but that's how I would imagine, since we now know that she's female, mm-hmm. you know, or, you
she
know.
She could be hermaphroditic. I mean, there's no male.
There is no male.
So she could just reproduce on her own.
Exactly. And which, you know, for some women would be a benefit.
A bonus. Yeah. I want the thrills of parenthood with all that nasty sex. You really are a conservative, aren't you, Mom?
No, I'm not. No. Well, I know. That's not true at all. But you could see her, you know, just kind of laying back and thinking, oh, I can get nice and big and fat and I don't have to care what anybody else thinks. You know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think it's interesting that she chooses Pennywise as her alter ego.
I'm not sure she chooses Pennywise. I always feel like the form she takes are a reflection of whoever's looking at her.
Yeah, but I don't know where. Well, Georgie, of course, saw.
Most of them see a clown, but you know, the fear of the clown is fairly common.
Common, but Georgie wasn't afraid of the clown.
Yeah,
he was more afraid of it being a stranger.
Okay, so maybe it has some power, but
yeah, I don't know, or maybe he just figured that for Georgie, this was a form that Georgie would respond to.
Yeah.
Because he does. Mm-hmm. You know, and when he gets big and ugly and mean and the teeth come out, the teeth thing I didn't get in the movie. I didn't like the teeth.
It looked fake.
That looked more than fake. That looked contrived. That was like, but, you know, okay, we're reaching now.
The limits of a small budget. I mean, you have to make do with prosthetics and things where CG might be more effective.
It's a Stephen King novel. You could have thought they'd come up with more money. Of course, maybe they knew that they usually fail.
Yeah, that's the thing is Stephen King in Hollywood is not a big draw.
Well, if they'd let Stephen King write his own screenplays, maybe it'd be better.
Maybe. Has he ever written his own screenplay?
I don't think so.
I would think he would have been offered to do one at some point.
I think I would have to look. And he may have said, I don't want to do that crap. I just want to write.
I would bet he did Maximum Overdrive. I would bet he wrote the screenplay for
I'd
that,
have to look it
since
up.
Since he directed it.
I'd have
I would
to
bet
look
he also
up.
Wrote it.
Well, and also, this is the first movie of his that I saw where he didn't have a part.
That's true. He doesn't have a cameo in it.
Not one single cameo.
I know he really liked the movie.
I mean, that's like what's his name in the Marvel movies not having a cameo?
Stan Lee,
yeah. Stan Lee. I mean, can you imagine a Marvel comic without Stan Lee in it somewhere? No. I mean, eventually the guy's going to die and won't be in it. But
I mean, he's like 94, so
yeah.
Yeah,
he's getting there.
He's not going to make it much longer. No. His wife just died,
oh,
unfortunately.
Really?
Yeah. No. It was really sad.
I didn't realize he was that old.
Yeah.
I thought he was in his 80s.
No, he's like 93, 94. Wow. Yeah.
Well, he's a pretty vibrant little old dude.
Yeah. He's still really active mm-hmm. and obviously still executive produces all this stuff. What I was thinking about with it, the thing that's really interesting to me is how it, you know, in order to keep the kids from coming back, it makes their lives great. I think maybe its guilty pleasure is, you know, the specifics of how it's going to enrich their lives.
And before they kill it, it tells them, I can make you live for 200, 300, 400 years, and I can give you all this mm-hmm. riches. And I can, if you let me live, I'll give you all of this.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, this is, of course, my Christian brain, but all I could think of was the devil tempting Jesus. Mm-hmm. I will give you all of this if you worship me. And that's kind of the same feeling I got. That was the only time in the movie I really got that moral, this is wrong feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, this part is wrong. Don't do it. And the kids were, or the men, I should say, rose above that, where a lot of men wouldn't.
Yeah.
A lot of men would have taken the grub and gone.
I mean, especially because, you know, as human beings, we're petrified of death.
Yes, like, we are.
Somewhat universally.
Yes. That's why we have a lot of myths surrounding it and everything like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of, you know, everyone has a belief about what happens when you die and
nobody knows.
And no one knows for sure, but it's very comforting to believe that there's something.
Yeah.
A paradise or another life, a reincarnation. Yeah. There's something, it can't just end with this.
Right.
And so that's somewhat universal. That's why most people believe in these things. But yeah, just that promise of extra life, eternal life.
Yeah, there's
is
a
very
lot of
tempting.
People. There's a lot of people mm-hmm. that would think twice.
Yeah,
and they would take it. I personally don't want to live forever.
I don't either.
Oh my God.
Like, we were talking about this. Yeah. Like, when we met at Olga's, like, yeah, the idea of eternal life sounds terrible.
I can't, well, I mean, if I could be 25 for the rest of my life, sure. But I want to tell you something. I'm getting older by the minute, and you know what? It ain't fun.
I don't know. I just, people want to live forever. Like, I don't really see the appeal in that.
If you were to offer me wealth?
I'd be tempted. Nice. Yeah.
I would be tempted. Good health. I'd be tempted. If you were to offer me, you know.
Yeah, I live the same amount, but I never, like, decay or get unhealthy.
Right.
That would be very tempting.
Yeah, go perfectly healthy until the day I die. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Like I said, enough wealth to never have to worry again. But then wealth brings its own worries. So that's only trading one worry for another.
Yeah, I've only ever wanted enough money to be comfortable.
Me too. And I've never wanted, you know, like, I play the lotto once in a while when it gets really big, but, you know, I just want enough to pay off the house and the car and and the kids' student loans.
That's a whole separate thing.
So,
you're welcome that I never asked you to co-sign on anything or took out any loans at all, actually.
No, you didn't. You did it right. And I tell people all the time how proud I am of you.
Well, I mean, let's wrap up.
Okay.
We've been recording for an hour and a half.
And my husband's getting hungry.
I can very easily edit it down to a nice, good little episode. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I did too.
Do you have anything you want to recommend, like anything you're watching that you'd want our listeners to check out?
I just finished watching the first 4 seasons of Blacklist, The Blacklist.
You were telling me you were watching that.
I think it's excellent.
I watched the pilot over at Brett's house, and I liked it. I just don't know if I want to invest that much time.
Well, season 5 is currently on TV, but I'm going to wait for it to come on Netflix because I hate commercials. Mm-hmm. I've really learned not to like commercials. During the previous election season, I became very familiar with Netflix and Amazon Prime so that I could avoid all the nonsense.
Yeah, political commercials are a killer.
Oh, God, I hate them. And car commercials. What is with car commercials? Stop it.
It's a big thing in Michigan.
Ugh.
Yeah, just all the local car dealerships.
They could just take them all off the air. And medication commercials, I think they should be banned forever because patients all think that they have everything that's on TV.
Yeah.
But that, I am currently watching another series, Dark Matter.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, I think it's a couple years old. It might be a couple years old. I'm not sure how many seasons are actually. I think it's like 3 seasons are on Netflix.
Uh-huh.
And I'm kind of enjoying it. It's a little campy and it's a little goofy. And some of it, sometimes you sit there and you go, really? But it has its moments. It's brain candy.
What's the idea?
The idea is that there are multiple planets and this ship's crew come out of stasis sleep with no memories.
Oh.
None at all. They have no idea who they are, what they are, or when they are. And the ship's robot, android, can't tell them anything. But when they wake up the android tries to kill them all. So they have to shut down the android and reboot her.
Huh.
When they reboot her, then she comes back and she says, well, I don't really know anything. And, you know, somebody wiped all the things in the ship's logs. And so they start piecing together things and find out that they're all criminals. And they're all very nice people, but they find out that they're criminals. They're all wanted for murder and mayhem and everything. So
how they,
you know, it's that, you know, nature nurture thing, you know, how much of this is really them and how much of it was circumstances. And, so it's really kind of fun to see them deal with coming to the realization of who they really are versus who they think they are now. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Let me see. What do I want to recommend? I'm just finishing up the 7th season of Shameless, which is about a family of con artists. And it's really cool. I've been watching it for years. It's on Netflix. Yeah. It's very mature. It's a Showtime original.
Oh, so it has a little bit more to it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of substance. You really see these characters grow and change. And, like, I love it.
Okay.
Like, even though they're all despicable people.
Still lovable.
Yeah.
if they're done well.
They have redeeming moments and they relapse. And it's really interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. So I'm just about done with the 7th season of that. I don't know if the 8th season's come out yet on Showtime, but I'm going to look for it but I think 7 is all that's on Netflix. My Twitter is at play underscore architect. Our Twitter is at quote guilty. You can find us at facebook.com/quote unquote guilty. Email us at quoteunquoteguilty@gmail.com or contribute to our Patreon at patreon.com/word salad, which has a bunch of exclusive content that we've had a lot of fun putting together, and supports the other Word Salad podcasts. Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah. And nobody has to reach out and touch me.
Yeah, you have a Twitter. What's your Twitter? Do you want people to follow you on Twitter?
They can. I'm extremely opinionated and political, so you might want to be careful.
That's why I don't follow you on Twitter.
I know you don't. It's JenKRN, J-E-N-K-R-N. I think that's my actual Twitter name.
I think that's right.
At JenKRN. And
if you like fighting with Republicans on Twitter, my mom will go 10 rounds any day.
But if you get mean, nasty, or insulting, I will block you.
Well, meaner or nastier than you get.
I don't get mean and nasty.
Sure you don't.
No, I don't. I'm never mean and nasty. I am a sweet
mama. I'm going to go find some screenshots. All right. We're going to sign off.
Yes, because now it's 7:45 and I know Greg is hungry.
I'm surprised you didn't come and get something.
Ah, me too.
All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks,
Mom. Good night. Bye. Thank you, honey.
This podcast is a Word Salad production. Wonky oranges, righteous dragons.
Okay, done. Now the podcast is in. Okay.